Because I need something for my documentary fix.
Huh. Oh, yeah? You should watch I Think We're Alone Now. It's about Tiffany Stalkers.
Oh, shit.
It's
doesn't seem to be anyone around.
It's terrifying. The opening of the movie is this one guy. He's probably, like, late 40s, and he's going through these press clippings, and they're his press clippings. Like, he's got, like, a copy of his restraining order, and he's got a copy of, like, all these news clips. He's, like, reading. He's, like, Tiffany Stalker, blah, 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 camped outside her house. And he's, like, just, like, reading, like, all happy and smiling. Like, he thinks they're best friends. Huh. And this is, like, it's just terrifying.
It's like he's famous now because of her.
Yeah, and he, like, but, like, he goes to all her concerts still. And, like, he, like, waits outside. He's, like, he tells people, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to hang out with Tiffany afterwards. Yeah, we're all, they're like, are you a fan? Oh, no, we're friends. And he's just super delusional. It's kind of creepy.
God damn it! I get it!
It was just crap. It was terrible.
I was titillated.
I know you want to go.
No, I slept with, like, three girls a night, and no one ever said anything.
Dude!
Oh, God, you guys are disgusting.
Boring.
So boring.
That is an amazing film.
Ooh, I love me some Statham.
That's a little bit of brilliance just came out of your mouth there, Justin. I like it.
Do you want to keep going?
Hi, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. After a long furlough, I have returned. This is Randy speaking to you. I'm here tonight with Amanda, David, and Justin. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Fabulous.
Awesome.
Huzzah. You know, it's been a while since I've been able to spend some real quality time with you guys, and I'm happy to be back. So, Amanda, what's going on in the world of TV? Have you been watching House of Cards on Netflix?
Oh, my God, have I been. I powered through the entire second season on Friday and Saturday, and I just watched it all straight through. I only took a break to sleep.
That's the way you do it.
And it was pretty intense. I kind of felt after, I mean, even before I was finished watching it, I kind of felt that the first season is pretty much just a prologue to the second season. Like, to be honest, I don't really think you need to watch the first season. Like, if you're not up to date on House of Cards, you don't really need to watch the first season. You could just watch the recap that they have at the beginning of the second season, and then you're probably good to go. Because I really think that all the good action, like the really insane stuff, happens in season two. I really felt like they were pushing the boundaries of people's, of like, audience expectations. And it just made me think, like, the whole time, what's going to happen next? And I really wasn't expecting it to end where it did. I mean, I saw it coming, but obviously, it's pretty clear where it's headed once you're getting into the season. But I thought that it would take them longer to get there. I thought they'd drag it out longer. And so even though it only came out on this past Friday, I'm really excited to see what happens in season three, because I'm just like, where can they go from here? Like, what could they possibly do next?
I like to do that Howard Dean guy, and I just keep saying, and all the way to the White House, yeah.
Just do that, like, that yell.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
And granted, I haven't seen all of season two yet, so I don't know everything that happens, but I think season one is really, really good. I wouldn't recommend for people not to watch it, because that it's an amazing show, and once you kind of get hooked, you're going to want to watch as much of it as possible. So you're definitely going to want to absorb season one. Plus, it does really help give backstories for certain characters, and it'll make episode one of season two a little bit more – the certain event that happens that I'm not going to spoil for people listening, it'll make it a little bit more impactful if they watch season one.
Okay, yeah, I take it back. You should still watch season one first.
Yeah, and I like that they just, like, start, like, season two start off, like, right with a bang. Like, both Frank and his wife both had, like, just, like, I can't believe they did that moments. Like, mm-hmm. Obviously, we know what Frank's is. And then Claire's with the pregnant lady.
Oh, yeah.
That I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I in my wildest dreams, I would never even think about saying such things to another human being. Yeah.
I don't care if it withers and dies inside of you.
Holy smokes.
But, I mean, that's what's cool about the show is that it's, I mean, Frank Underwood is such an awesome character, and he's just, like, so despicable. But then, like, his wife isn't, she could almost have her own show. And it's great to see their dynamic. And Robin Wright and Kevin Spacey are just heads and shoulders above everyone else in the show. And it really shows that they're, like, movie stars. Like, they're movie stars, and the show is shot in a way that just highlights how awesome they are. And I can't be more excited. I'm 8 episodes in, and I can't wait to watch the last 5.
I saw that she directed an episode.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Once more, internet money.
Mm-hmm. The one that opens up with them in the Situation Room, talking about Chinese boats.
I didn't even notice the credits.
They're so long.
Yeah, it's a minute and like 43 seconds, the credits. Because I always like it when it starts off without an opening and it just goes straight to the credits, because then I can just fast forward. But otherwise, if it's like 2 or 3 minutes spent on some random opening, then I got to pay attention to the time when I'm fast forwarding.
Yeah, there were a couple episodes that if the credits were at the very beginning, my Netflix automatically skipped it.
Yeah.
Like it would start at like a minute 45 or whatever. It was pretty rad.
Yeah, Netflix is pretty cool about that. When you binge watch, it'll do that.
Mm-hmm. They're so long. The longest credits of any TV show ever.
Or like if the show has like previously on, then I think it also skips that too.
Yeah.
Or at least Amazon Instant Watch does that for sure, because I'd noticed it did that when I was watching Veronica Mars. I really appreciated that, not having to watch the previously on, since I had just watched that episode. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I was talking to my brother about it, about the show, and because I had already finished while he was still watching, and he was speculating that, you know, Claire would ruin everything based on what happened last season.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason she and Frank ever have any problems with each other is when they feel like the other is not helping to advance them towards their mutual goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this season, you really saw them become a united front, and it was terrifying.
Right.
Like, it's insane how far their machinations went. Like, choices, like, decisions and, like, actions that they made early on are completely paid off at the end, and you just realize how long they've been planning everything that they've been doing, and it's mind-blowing.
Right. It's a lot like Inception in a way that they plant seeds and then you just watch it grow throughout mm-hmm. the course of a couple episodes. And then, you know, you mentioned how they just became like a force to be reckoned with when they partnered up that way. And I felt the exact same way with when Stamper and Seth got together. I was like, you have two of the smartest people in the same room working on the same team that now agreed to help each other. And I was like, Frank's going places, boy, I tell you what. And I was like so excited about that.
Or so. When Frank and Claire like tag teaming the president and the first lady.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And like, yeah, he's just planting stuff in his ear and she's planting stuff in her ear. And it's like, oh, this ain't going to be good. This is going to be bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Good show.
Good show.
Yeah. Watch it, peoples. Do it. Next on my list. Oh, so on Sunday, a new trailer came out for Game of Thrones, the upcoming season, and like the theme of the trailer is vengeance, because you know, lots of people were wronged last season, and there are certain characters who are looking to get some revenge.
Just the stupid Starks.
But I loved hearing Arya reciting like her kill list.
Oh yeah, Joffrey, Cersei, Ilpain, a couple other people. Maybe the Hound's on there.
The Hound.
Oh no, does she say his name in front of him?
Not in the commercial.
We also, I mean, a lot of it is stuff we've already seen, especially if you watched the featurette from last week. But we got a few like extra shots of like Joffrey and What's-Her-Face's wedding, Marjorie. Her hair looks insane. Like, I can't wait till our wedding so we can see her hair closer.
Wow.
That's what I'm waiting for. I want to know who she's wearing.
I just want to see the clothes.
Who made your dress, Marjorie? What are you wearing today?
Who are you wearing? And then, of course, Tyrion's trial.
Yeah. Yes.
That's going to be badass.
He's driving away in a white Bronco.
That's right. Without cowling.
I can't believe you remember his name. The other day, I was literally talking about that. I'm like, no one even knows who the guy was. I was driving it. And here you are shouting his name.
I was at Perry's Pizza. Watching it all happen.
I was playing my new drum set.
Hey?
Yeah. My sister was graduating high school that day.
You're going to be a drummer.
I was. Then I lost my arm. But that didn't stop me.
Didn't stop. It shouldn't.
But yeah, Game of Thrones looks good. I'm excited. And now you're telling me that the White Walker at the end on the horse is Mr. Coldhands.
Oh, looks like... I mean, it doesn't look like the regular Walker.
He's just got a horse. He's moving up in the world.
Yeah, because Coldhands, he rode something. I don't know if it's a horse or a deer.
And we don't really see them, right? They don't really show up at the rest in the rest of the book.
I don't Walkers? Remember.
Yeah.
Dave Walkers. Does.
I do what?
You remember the Walkers in book 3. At least him, Coldhands.
Yeah, I remember Coldhands from the book. I don't remember any of the Walkers.
But they don't have any fights with them in the third book.
They're busy at the wall.
Yeah.
They're busy.
They got other things to worry about.
Yeah. They got out of the way when Mance Rayner and the Army of the North came trumping down.
I wonder how much budget they're putting into, like, if they're going to have, like, giants and those Shadow Cats. And that sort of thing. Shadow Cats, I guess, would be easy because they're invisible for the most part.
There's like a bunch.
500 Shadow Cats. Holy smokes.
Well, I mean, it's really the only... Because usually they're pretty big about blowing their budget on like one big set piece per season. And that's really the only big, like, epic event in this thing. I mean, there's a lot of cool shit that happens. But most of their cool stuff is like small, you know, combatants and, you know, stuff like that, or they could blow a majority of their budget, and I hope it spans over like a couple episodes. I think Justin, you and I were talking about it, that I hope that it spans over like 3 episodes. I don't want it to be like a one and done at the wall, or have the entire last episode just be at the wall,
right? Like how Blackwater was.
Yeah, that'd be, I mean, I'd be pretty excited about that.
Yeah, because that's a long fight scene. You think of like what is it? The Battle of Helm's Deep, for example, you know, that's about a 40-minute deal when it's all said and done from start to finish. There's a lot of cutting back and forth, but I could totally agree with that.
Yeah, and I want Jon Snow to have the Daenerys moment. I want the season to end on Jon Snow.
Yeah, just peeing over the wall.
Yeah.
Peeing his name. Peeing the word snow on the wall.
From 700 feet in the air.
Yeah.
It's not going to end on him. It always ends on what's-her-face.
Yeah, the dragon.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Boring.
They know. They're trying really hard to make her cool, though.
They are.
She has dragons. That's
yeah, she's the one with the dragons.
Right.
That's why everyone watches. It's the dragons.
They never come.
Dragons!
Winter's never coming. Dragons are never coming.
It's all a ruse.
After everything's done, there's going to be a little footnote. Epilogue. Winter came. End.
Period.
Ned was right.
Yeah. That's the thing with Westeros, is that seasons last for years.
Yeah.
And not a whole lot of time has passed since Ned has been chopped.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, just because winter's coming doesn't mean it's like coming right away.
Yeah, winter's coming. Thanks, Ned. It always comes. Right. There's always going to be a winter.
Oh, well.
Stupid Sansa.
Anyway.
I hope she gets it sooner or later.
What's that?
Sansa?
Oh, yeah?
It's not enough. Joffrey wasn't violent enough with her.
Wow.
He was just emotionally disturbing to her, and occasionally would have Meereen or whatever smack her, but it's all her fault. Like, if she wasn't such just a whiny, like, gold-digging C-word, then Ned would be alive, and the Starks would be united, and Ned could have rallied people to his cause. Maybe even Robert would still be alive, but she had to go, like, blind to Cersei. That's a bitch move, man. That's a bitch move.
Yeah.
And then she got to live in the palace and wear nice dresses and be friends with Marjorie Tyrell and her fabulous hair and her gossiping grandma, you know, and her brothers are all dead because of her, and her mom's dead and her dad's dead. She's still kicking. All she knows, Arya's dead. But not Sansa. Sansa's living in the capital, living the dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, married to Tyrion.
Yeah, married to an important Lannister, an important political figure. He might be shortened to figured, but, you know, still Lannister.
He's her little lion.
Yeah. Maybe in book 7, Arya will kill Sansa. She'll be like, you know, this is all your fault. Just like, put needle through her heart.
Adds her name to the list.
I would be ecstatic. I'd be like, you know what? I like Arya a lot. Arya's my favorite character now. Because she killed Sansa.
I think she should ride on top of the Hound's shoulders and just kill everybody like, that way.
Like Master Blaster from Thunderdome?
I think that would be awesome. Cool.
Moving on. Star Wars Rebels, we just posted TV spots for this new cartoon that's going to be on the Disney Channel. So if you missed the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, it's going to be on.
I like the fact that, at least in the TV spots, it's using original trilogy music, and it's using vehicles that we're familiar with. You got TIE fighters, you got, like, familiar-looking stormtroopers. You got a lot of stuff that's going to pull towards people's nostalgia for the original movies, and I think that's going to hopefully draw a lot of people towards it. Even the little symbol that kind of gets illustrated on screen is similar to, like, the symbol of the rebellion from A New Hope.
Yeah, and everything's dirty and old again. It's not like pristine like the Clone Wars. It's a dirty time.
And it's all like boxy looking, the ship designs and everything. It's very much, it just has that feel of the original trilogy, which I think is huge.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
I hate the Tale of Two Cities more than just about anything.
You know what? I was reading Tale of Two Cities, and I got up until, like, the last few pages, and I was just like, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
And I stopped reading it right before, like, the end, because I was tired of reading it.
That is brutal.
How did we segue from Star Wars to Charles Dickens? I'm really curious.
Because she said it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
And okay.
Talking about, like, the setting just made me think of that opening line.
Well, did you end up watching Clone Wars, Randy, or did you give up?
No, I watched it. I followed it all the way through.
It got pretty intense once, Savage Opress or like Maul's brother and like Maul and his brother went to fight the Emperor, and there was a Mandalorian who had like a black lightsaber. It got intense. Yeah. I was pretty happy how it ended with all the shenanigans with the Night Sisters, just Force users galore. You know. You had Grievous, you had Ventress, you had Maul, you had his brother, you had Sidious, you had Obi-Wan, you had Anakin, you had Ahsoka, you had all these just Force users in these battle royales, and it was actually really exciting. And so I'm interested to see how they're going to wrap it up in the final season for Netflix. It definitely turned the corner from that show that was about Padme like filibustering trade regulations.
Yeah, they really kind of, well, it's interesting because they finally found their voice, but it was too far into the series because a lot of people like you guys probably already stopped watching it. But they really started making it more action-packed when they realized that, oh, you know what? We can actually sell more action figures if we make cool stuff and actually take advantage of the word wars in the title of the show and actually have some battles and shit that people are interested in. So it got really cool after a while. And like David said, the more Force users they got involved, the more intricate some of the fights became. And it just... It started to feel good. It started to feel like Star Wars again.
And Dooku.
And I think that they kind of learned their lesson from the end of that show, and they're carrying that into Star Wars Rebels with them. That is my hope.
Yeah. With the Inquisitor?
Yeah, the Inquisitor looks cool. Do you see his lightsaber?
Yeah, it's got the little round thing, so it spins.
Yeah, it spins around, kind of like how Grievous could spin around the lightsabers. And from what I read, too, he can separate it, so he can fight with two different blades. But it's kind of cool how that circular thing goes around his hand, because one of the Jedi characters also has a lightsaber that has, like, a hand guard. Like, this crazy, like, boxy hand guard. It almost looks like a rapier kind of sword with that hand guard on it. And it makes me wonder if it's made out of something, like... Cortosis that can't have a lightsaber cut through it, because otherwise why do you need a hand guard on a lightsaber unless that's where they store your acid that you can spit out of the hilt?
Yeah, now we're talking.
I almost had my youngest son call you, Justin. He got a Darth Maul lightsaber for his birthday, and he, when you break it in half, like, you, if you don't put the caps on, it's like hollow at the bottom, and he's like, look, Dad, this is where I shoot people with it. And I'm like, oh, you are perfect, Zach. Just laughing, thinking of you. I'm like, what would you put in there? He's like, I don't know, like a laser or something. I'm like, oh, like acid? He's like, what's acid?
It just makes sense, especially when they're always like shoulder to shoulder, and they could just kind of turn this little hilt towards their face and just fucking press the button, presto, yeah. Acid in the face.
A blaster, they can deflect that. Projectiles, they can reroute them, but you throw a bunch of liquid at somebody, like in a spray form, they're going to get some on them.
Yes.
You're going to mess up his golf swing.
Yes, you are.
And money shot.
Face. I think that would be awesome. And then when they're like, oh, my eyes, you cut them in fucking half. I would force pull them into my lightsaber. How about that? Instead of force push, pull them right into it.
Ugh. Kuju.
Yeah. And then I'd make a Z in their body like I'm Zorro.
It's all. Rebels, check it out. It's going to be awesome.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you see RoboCop this weekend?
What about The Walking Dead? Are we not talking about that?
I don't want to talk about it.
Fuck
that show. It's not going to be that interesting.
Alright.
I did. I saw RoboCop, and I had mixed feelings about it. I will say that I went into it with very little expectation. I wasn't excited. Gotta oil
that
chair, Andy.
That's been happening all night.
Sorry.
Don't move.
I went into RoboCop with pretty low expectations, not expecting much, because, you know, I was a big fan of the Verhoeven masterpiece that was the original. And there were some parts that were better, some parts that weren't as good. I felt emotionally like when Murphy gets, you know, blasted in the original and they shoot his hand off. And it's a very intimate and violent and just terrible scene, and you feel for the guy. And the way they kind of took Murphy out this time was, it wasn't as impactful. Like, I'm not spoiling anything. Bad stuff happens to Alex Murphy, a police officer from Detroit, and he turns into RoboCop. And there's just no like emotional connection. Like it's basically a car bomb, and it's just
happens.
You don't see it. And, like you see, he goes out to his car, the car explodes, and next thing you know, they're, like, watching a video of, like, he's got 80% of his body, he's got fourth-degree burns, I think we can make him a candidate for RoboCop. And it's just, on that level, it disappointed me, but then they did this whole thing to where in the original, he kind of comes out and he's already full-blown RoboCop, to where in this one, you kind of see him training to become RoboCop, you know, almost like a 80s style musical montage, because the whole premise of this one is that Michael Keaton, who runs OmniCorp, OC, without the P, he's a military contractor who has developed these sentient robots like the Ed 209 and some humanoid versions of the Ed 209, and they police the world. So we instead of sending soldiers to, like, Afghanistan, we now send these machines. So our human soldiers aren't being killed. Americans aren't being killed overseas in these wars. But there's a law in place to where you still have to have human police officers. They want to make sure that someone living, breathing, who can think for himself is the one pulling the trigger. So he needs to find, like, a PR move. So RoboCop isn't the end game like he is in the original, to where they want to make all these RoboCops. RoboCop is like a PR move, so they can see that OC or OmniCorp isn't a bad corporation. We have this RoboCop guy, you know, let us go the next step and just put machines in the police force. So they kind of use it like, you know, make Alex Murphy the last human, the last American person that dies defending his city. And it's a very different movie, and, you know, like I said, it's got some people love it, some people hate it. It does some things better, some things worse. It's worth checking out. I would give it, you know, a solid B.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would give it a solid B. Really, the supporting cast is what carries the film. Gary Oldman is amazing in it, as always. Michael Keaton is always great. Samuel L. Jackson, even though his part's not very big, he does a really good job. Really the only ones that I would say kind of disappoint are Abby Cornish as Murphy's wife. And then Joel Kinnaman as Murphy is kind of, he's just kind of there. It's nothing special. What is different is that Murphy still is cognitive. Like, he's not like he's more man than machine mentally. You know, he still has all of his memories. He's able to interact with his kid and his wife and stuff like that. And he's not like an unfeeling robot like he was in the originals. And so if I took anything away from what I liked about it was that this one tried to be its own film. You know, it took some different twists and turns. It told a similar story, but a different story. And so for that, I was pretty excited as far as remakes go. One thing that I thought they really improved on is the Ed 209s are just rad. Like, you know how they're kind of silly and like stop motion and just kind of freeze and just like their whole allure is, you know, they just turn that guy into ground beef, just shooting him. In this one, they're just these cool little almost like exosuit looking things. And I would be pretty terrified if I saw one. They're pretty cool. So check it out. I didn't, it definitely was in the scheme of remakes. You know, everyone complains about remakes and reboots. This one was worth it because they tried something different. Sure, there was a lot of great nods to the original. Like, it opens up with the theme from the original RoboCop, and it just gives you goosebumps right away.
That's cool. Yeah. I didn't know they reused the music.
And he does a lot of his like one-liners, and so, you know, just as a fun little nod. But other than that, they made a lot of good changes, and the supporting cast this time around is just top-notch instead of just kind of caricatures. So yeah, RoboCop, check it out. It's worth it.
Cool.
But Chris Pratt, who was in the Lego movie, is going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy later on this year. And the Guardians of the Galaxy has been releasing stills pretty regularly the last couple days. And they have announced that tomorrow, or when you're listening to this today, they're going to be debuting the first trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy on Jimmy Kimmel Live at 11:35 p.m. I guess it doesn't matter what time zone you're in. Central, I guess, is 10:35 for you Central folk. And it's going to have an intro by Chris Pratt to set it up. So set your DVRs or stay awake and drink some coffee and check out the Jimmy Kimmel Live so you can see Guardians of the Galaxy trailer tomorrow, or today if you're listening on Tuesday.
I like it.
Yeah. Because it's got Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt's cool. It's got Batista. He won the Royal Rumble. It's got Justin's girlfriend, Zoe Saldana. It's got everyone's favorite Michael Rooker from Walking Dead. It's got Bradley Cooper doing a voice. Vin Diesel's doing a voice. Benicio Del Toro's going to be in it. I mean, it's a pretty stacked movie. Yeah. But backtracking slightly to RoboCop and Lego Movie, it was kind of interesting at the box office this weekend. Lego Movie maintained its lead, its first place dominance. It made $50 million over the long President's Day weekend. And so that's only a dip of 27%, which is pretty good in today's day in society. What wasn't so good is poor Colin Farrell can't catch a break, and his new movie, Winter's Tale, made an anemic $7.2 million, making it seventh place for the week. So,
what movie?
I just felt bad.
Boring.
I just felt bad for Colin Farrell.
What's Winter's Tale? What is that?
It's a romance. It's a comedy. It came out on Valentine's Day. They thought that'd be a great idea, have a romantic movie. But everyone went instead to About Last Night for their date movie, the Kevin Hart movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's been in a lot, too, least recently.
Yeah. He's listening to the radio, and it's like, oh, it's Friday, so it must be another Kevin Hart movie coming out.
Yeah. I saw, last movie I went to see, he was in three trailers.
Yeah, I could see that.
That's a lot of action.
Yeah. He's entering Michael Cera territory. Just being in everything until you're sick of him. But RoboCop did pretty good. It made $21 million over the four-day weekend. It actually opened on Wednesday, so it had $5 million to that. So it's at about $26 million. It's still got a little ways to go till it makes its $100 million budget, but it'll probably get there. Plus, it'll do well overseas.
Right. I think it's probably going to be done in the United States. I think everybody that wanted to see it saw it over the weekend.
Yeah, probably.
I bet that shit dips below 10 next
week.
You
think
so? Yeah.
That big a drop?
Yes.
Well, let's hope not. I like it.
Especially when you got that new Kevin Costner movie coming out and Pompeii.
3 Days to Kill?
Yeah, I think that movie looks awesome. I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
You can't take him seriously.
I can.
Why can't you take him seriously?
I don't know. He just seems so weird and him in an action role like that. I'm just so used to him being in some sappy, like, romantic movie or with gills.
You need to watch that movie. You need to watch that movie where he's like a serial killer or some shit. Mr. Brooks, did you ever see that movie?
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Crazy.
He's good in a lot of stuff, aside from Randy's favorite movies, Waterworld and The Postman.
I didn't say he wasn't, but I'm just not accustomed to him being like an action hero.
He's cool in Silverado. He's a cowboy, but he shoots a lot of people. His name is Jake.
And he's even good in The Guardian.
What's
that? That's the Coast Guard movie with Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, yeah. I didn't like the ending of that movie.
No. Ambiguous.
Yeah, I was dumb. I liked the whole thing until the end, and then it lost me. I was like, damn it. Stupid.
And James Cameron recently came out to talk about Avatar. Not 2 and 3, but 2, 3, and 4. They're going to film all three of them concurrently. They're going to star the majority of the same cast who weren't killed in the first one. And they're going to come out in December 2016, December 2017, and December 2018. So we are going to be seeing a crap ton of Pandora over the next couple years. He also has said that he hasn't completely ruled out shooting at high frame rate. That he probably will indeed shoot in high frame rate, but he won't shoot the entire film that way. He'll shoot selected scenes, kind of like how Christopher Nolan does with IMAX. He'll usually shoot a couple key scenes in IMAX and the rest in standard 35mm. It sounds like that's kind of how James Cameron is going to do with the Avatar sequels.
Sounds expensive.
Well, when you're the director of the top two highest grossing films of all time, they open their checkbooks for you. So, you know, some people didn't really care for Avatar.
Myself included.
I enjoyed Avatar. I mean,
I did too.
I didn't watch it. I don't think I watched it until like I'd heard so much of the hype, and then when I saw it, I was like, really?
Ugh.
Oh my god!
Ride a bull, Randy?
Okay, let me mute it because you shouldn't have even heard that. My mic was muted.
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. You know what it is? I think the mic on my laptop is active.
Oh man, that's awesome.
I'm over here trying to be all cool. Like moving only when I have my mic muted.
No. Nope.
It's not working.
I thought you were doing just because I kept talking. I was talking too long.
Like, well, maybe subconsciously.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was like you playing me off.
Is Cameron going to be directing 2, 3, and 4?
Yes, he's going to be directing 2, 3, and 4.
Wow. He hasn't made that many movies in a row in a long time.
Yeah, because he went from Titanic in 97 to Avatar in 2009.
Do we care about Avatar anymore? Is it still a thing?
I do. I like it.
I think it's a huge thing.
I like the music.
It's such a boring story.
What?
It was like Pocahontas meets Dances with Wolves.
Planet's in danger, Amanda.
And I forget. Yeah, I haven't seen Pocahontas in a while.
Tree.
I don't remember where the 9-foot blue aliens in Pocahontas. But my Disney knowledge.
Yeah, I'm inclined to actually agree with Amanda on this one, and it was kind of boring, and I'm completely over it.
The difficult to find element was called unobtainium. Like,
yeah, it's a little on the nose.
Really?
Well, I saw it when it first came out, and so I was not jaded or spoiled. So I think sometimes when something is as immensely popular as Avatar or even Titanic for that matter, I think that if you see it, you know, a long time into the cycle, you can go into it with a lot of preconceived conceptions or like people saying, "Oh, it's the greatest thing ever," and it could skew you. And I'm surprised to hear that Randy is such a film gearhead that you weren't enamored with, you know, some of the things that Cameron did, especially with his, you know, bringing back of 3D and.
You know what? I was when it came out like 20 years ago. How long has it been since the first Avatar came out?
2009.
It's been a long time. I've lost wood. I am approaching middle age, and you know what? I can't keep my film erection up as much as I used to be able to, and it has been almost 5 years, and I don't care anymore. I mean, something's going to have to come and give it a little rub and tug before I get excited again. So maybe when I see a trailer for the next one, I'll get excited again. But as of right now, over it.
Bunch of cynical motherfuckers.
Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing.
Then he loses the Oscar to his lady, his ex-wife. It's got to be salt in the wounds.
Oh, yeah.
But he's like, that's okay. My movie made $1 trillion and your movie made $6
I liked Hurt Locker. I remember being surprised that Guy Pearce was in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, I haven't seen this guy in ages. And then he blows up in the first, like, 4 minutes of the movie. I was like, oh.
Spoiler alert.
I was sad. Whatever. That movie's old.
You're like, good on you, Guy Pearce, for getting this. Oh, no, he's dead.
Yeah, that's too bad.
You need to do more work, Guy Pearce. Then he came back and was Killian in Iron Man 3. You're like, you need to do less work, Guy Pearce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked him.
I like Memento.
I liked Count of Monte Cristo. He was in that, too.
Yeah, that is also good. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. And nothing else.
That's it.
I might give
Time you Machine was cool. Oh, Time Machine.
L.A. Confidential?
Yeah, L.A. Confidential. He's an asshole in that movie, though. He's got those glasses.
But he redeems himself.
Yeah, at the end when he kills everybody.
I saw the Time Machine opening day.
Wow.
I was excited. I left less excited.
It's like they tried to make him a superstar, but it didn't really pan out.
Yeah. And then the Clive Owen came around. They're like, let's do this to Clive Owen. And then they're like, oh, we can't do it with him either?
Yeah, that poor guy, man. And I like a lot of his movies, but they just don't do well in the box office. And I feel really bad.
He does a lot of terrible stuff,
too. I know. And you know what's funny is the one movie that I don't like that he does, everyone else does, The Children of Men. I fucking hate that movie so much.
Yeah, it's a boring
minority.
Well, whenever I see duplicity on TV, I get excited because my brain reads it as multiplicity. And then, like, half second later when I realize it's duplicity, I'm like, aww.
Yeah,
so I'm the jerk. That's really all I got in the world of the films there.
All right, moving on. You know, I'm going to keep this short and sweet because I know we don't usually talk about toys a whole lot on the podcast, but Toy Fair was this past weekend, and saw some pretty cool stuff coming out. Well, some cool stuff, some kind of meh. David and I have been looking at a bunch of pictures from a bunch of different toy lines, and we're kind of overall unimpressed, but yeah. Saw some new stuff for Star Wars. Saw a lot of new stuff for the Rebels TV series, which is kind of cool. Like I mentioned when we were talking about the TV stuff, I really like the fact that they're going back to a lot of original trilogy designs. In fact, they have a new TIE fighter, and they're calling it the Inquisitor's TIE Advanced. And it looks like it's got flat wings, at least on the box art. But the model that they have set up for it there on display is kind of the curved wing kind of TIE Advance, like Darth Vader's from Episode 4 that we're familiar with seeing, but instead of being such hard angles, it's got more of like a gradual curve to it, and it looks like the wings are hinged, so they can kind of like open and close. It's kind of weird looking, but it's got that retro look that's really neat, and they have an X-Wing that looks identical to the original series, so I really do like the fact that they're hearkening back to that so much. Got to see finally those retro figures that I've been talking about, made by Funko and Super 7. They first put out a series of unreleased Kenner figures from 1979 from the first Alien movie, and those have been out for a few months now, and those are awesome, which, by the way, I finally just got mine. I got the Alien figure itself just this past week in the mail. Freaking amazing. But they have revealed photos for a shit ton of figures that they're going to be releasing all year long. Firefly, Back to the Future, Goonies, classic horror movie icons. They've got Nightmare Before Christmas, Escape from New York, The Rocketeer, Terminator, Predator, so many cool lines. And then you see the pictures of the figures, and they're so ridiculous looking, the majority of them. They don't even – their whole purpose with creating this retro line is to kind of give it that late 70s, early 80s Kenner feel. They want them all to look like the old Kenner Star Wars figures, but they look more like – kind of like the Play School knockoffs. Like, they don't have much detail in the clothing or the face. They just look kind of generic, which is really sad. And I don't know if the photos that we saw, the actual figures themselves, are going to be the final product. But some of them are cool just because they're iconic characters. Some of them are kind of cartoony looking. Like, the Back to the Future line, Doc Brown looks very cartoony. But I pre-ordered all the Back to the Future ones and all the Goonies ones. The Goonies ones are actually probably my favorite. The Sloth figure looks amazing, so that one's worth checking out. And freaking Chunk comes with his accessory, his like little weapon you can put in his hand, is a freaking Baby Ruth. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, but I mean, there's some really neat stuff, and just check out all the photos from Toy Fair, just to check it out. If you love that time period in the 80s, and you were a kid back then, and you wish they made toy lines for all these really neat movies, it'll kind of get you going, like, oh, maybe I should buy it, because they're only $10 a piece, which isn't that bad. I think originally the Aliens figures were initially selling for like $20 a pop when they were for sale at Comic-Con and stuff. And they have come down in price to $10 for each of the regular figures and $15 for the alien himself because he's bigger. But anyway, definitely worth checking out the line. It's pretty cool. Got to see some figures for Guardians of the Galaxy. David posted an article about that. Let's see. Is there anything you wanted to mention from Toy Fair, David?
There was a couple of cool Star Wars things that I was kind of surprised about. There was Star Wars, I think it was Conquest. And it's their take on Little Green Army Men. And so you'll buy a pack for, you know, $10 or whatever. And instead of having, you know, just generic, you know, Little Green Army Men, they'll be stormtroopers in different fun poses. And they'll sell, you know, the Rebellion counterpart, you know, like probably like Fleet Troopers or more than likely whatever troopers they have in the new Rebels show. And I thought it was kind of a cool little thing. You know, you can buy your kid, you know, 20 little guys they can set up and, you know, flick and take in the bathtub and bury and stuff. And so that was kind of what caught my eye. And then the other big toy that I like are the Transformers. And I was kind of let down by the Transformers line, the stuff I saw. But there were a couple cool things. They're doing a lot with the Jets. And I'm a big fan of the Seekers, which are, you know, Starscream, Skywarp, and Thundercracker. And it looks like it's going to be a big year for them. They're going to release several different skins for them, as well as some cool variants from both the comic books and the movies. So those were really my two big takeaways. That and the Legos. You know, there's going to be some cool licensed Legos that Randy was talking about earlier. And yeah, those were the big highs for me as far as Toy Fair goes this year.
Cool. I think it's time for a list, and it's been a while since I've been able to get one in with you guys. I've been sitting on this one for a few weeks, but I found it a couple weeks ago on Wikipedia, and this is kind of neat. It's obscure. It's 10 actors you never knew had a Star Wars credit, and these aren't necessarily all people that were in Star Wars movies or that necessarily appeared on screen. Some of these, they're people that lent their voice talents to either video games or animated series, but it's just people that you may not be that you may not have previously associated with the Star Wars franchise. So, ready to dive into it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's do it. Number 10 on the list, Ron Perlman. I had no idea that this guy had anything to do with Star Wars. You have any idea what he did? Want to venture a guess?
He was a voice.
He was indeed a voice, and his character actually interacts with R2-D2. He was a Trandoshan scavenger in two episodes of the first season of The Clone Wars. So, Trandoshans are they're kind of the lizard-looking race. Bosk, the bounty hunter, was a Trandoshan. They're also infamous slavers. They hate Wookiees, and they kind of – Wookiees hate them right back because their race was specifically, like, sold into slavery through Trandoshans. Little fun Star Wars fact for y'all. All right. Next, Jason London, not to be confused with his twin brother, Jeremy London, who was in Mallrats and shit. But yeah, this guy was a voice in Star Wars Jedi Starfighter for PS2 and Xbox. So, yeah.
Soul Sixer.
There you go. You must be looking at the same article I am.
No, I Googled it real quick because I was like Jason London, what?
Yeah, seriously.
You sound like you're from London.
Number eight, this one really kind of caught me off guard too. David Alan Grier.
What?
Yeah. And this one goes way back. But his first big break was in recording NPR's Star Wars radio drama in 1981.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. He also returned for the Empire Strikes Back radio drama, which aired in 1983. All right.
Sorry.
Next isn't an actor at all, but it's somebody that's kind of got a bizarre connection with the Star Wars universe. Stuart Copeland, the drummer from The Police. Can you possibly imagine what his involvement in Star Wars would be?
Did he play in the orchestra?
No, he did not. He actually did the theme song for the Droids TV series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's actually not bad. There's a YouTube link here that I'll send to you guys. It's kind of fun. But, yeah, check it out. Just go to YouTube and check out Droids animated series, and it'll pop up. But kind of crazy stuff. All right. Number six on the list, Kevin Pollak. Who we all know was in another Lucasfilm film, Willow. He was one of the brownies. But he was actually in the made-for-TV Ewoks The Battle for Endor.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I actually like Willow a lot. And even the Ewok movies were fun, too. I remember it being all kind of dark when the parents get killed and even the brother. I don't think I was ready for that at all. I was like, yeah, oh, shit.
Because they all die like in the beginning of the second movie, right?
Yeah.
The first one's all about rescuing the parents, and it was a happy, fun tale. And then next year, come the holidays, there was another Star Wars Christmas TV special. Well, it was a Christmas special, but it was around the holidays. And everybody dies in like the first 5 minutes, and then freaking Wilford Brimley comes in talking about oatmeal and diabetes.
Diabetes.
All right.
Because that's funny.
It is. Not really.
It's avoidable, so it's funny.
Yeah.
Sorry. If you've lost a foot, I'm not making fun of you.
All right, number five on the list, Anthony Heald. He was the doctor in Silence of the Lambs. He's done a bunch of shit. And he did the Star Wars audiobooks, and he actually voiced every single character in those books. We were just talking about audiobooks and how you don't like it. Like if a guy voices female roles, well, this guy did them all. Princess Leia, C-3PO, Darth Vader. He was all up in that shit.
Got around.
Yeah. And number four, this one's interesting. John Lithgow.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was he?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got a fun voice, though.
Yeah, see?
He was Yoda in the Empire Strikes Back radio drama.
Wow.
The NPR one, the same one that David Alan Grier was in.
How did these radio dramas work? They were just reenacting the movies?
More or less, yeah. But it's
they
kind
added
of fun.
Stuff.
Yeah, they added all sorts of stuff that was like in the novels, maybe, in the novelizations of the movies, but weren't necessarily in the movies themselves.
Oh.
But it was just like listening to an old radio show in like the 40s, kind of. All right, number three on the list, Rachel Lee Cook. So she actually got her start in any kind of Star Wars stuff by voicing Beru, Aunt Beru, in the Star Wars Robot Chicken special. But then she went on to actually do official work for Lucasfilm, voicing several characters in Star Wars The Old Republic.
Hmm.
So, fun stuff there. Number two, this one we're all familiar with. Well, all of us, because we are all fans of Star Tours. Paul Reubens, voice Yay. Of Captain Rex himself. But yeah, a lot of people don't know that was freaking Pee Wee Herman.
Uh-huh. He does laugh and everything in it.
I know.
Yeah. Okay, so this one is kind of shocking, and it's a little bit of a stretch, considering he was dead before Star Wars was made. John Wayne. The story goes that a recording of his voice was used and heavily filtered by Ben Burtt, the sound designer for Star Wars, and that is what you hear when you see the spy in Mos Eisley, Garindan, the guy with a little snoot. And he's like talking into a little communicator. He's the guy that kind of tips off the stormtroopers that Luke and Obi-Wan are over in Mos Eisley. What you hear him saying there is actually John Wayne speaking, but heavily, heavily filtered.
Huh.
Yeah. Bet you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Surprised you didn't know that.
He died in 1979.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, fuck. Doesn't matter.
Wildly inaccurate claim.
Wildly, wildly inaccurate. But you know what? It's okay, because I don't know. Was he still making movies at that stage in his life?
I think he was dying from too much red meat.
Probably. Well, you know, they pulled like 25 pounds of it out of
yeah, that's why I said it.
Yeah.
That urban legend or whatever.
Yeah, I doubt it's true, but I want to believe it.
He was a big guy.
Makes for a better story if it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should have said he vomited 29 pounds of beef.
That's a lot of vomit.
That would be cooler.
I don't know if that's cooler.
Well, I think it's more fun.
It's definitely more colorful.
Yeah, literally. So we got a fun game tonight.
Oh, we certainly do. Today, or when you listen to it, yesterday was our favorite director Michael Bay's birthday. He's a fan of the podcast. He's come on, and we know he listens, and so we want to wish him a happy birthday. And I thought we'd play a Michael Bay trivia game in honor of Mr. Bay's birthday. So it's going to be I'm going to ask questions, and first person to shout out the answer gets a point. If you guess and are incorrect, then you don't get to guess again. And, you know, to make it interesting, if two people guess wrong, I might even throw it to multiple choice for that last third person, the patient one who waits. So let's you guys all ready to play?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Woo.
All right. Question number one. What was Michael Bay's first big movie as a director?
The Rock.
Nope. 3, 2, 1. Multiple choice. Is it Transformers, Pearl Harbor, The Island, Bad Boys, or Armageddon?
Bad Boys.
Bad Boys. Randy gets one. Number two. What movie marked Michael Bay's first speaking role as an actor? This one I'm going to give you multiple choice right off the bat. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, Mystery Men, Tremors, Judge Dredd, or Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
I'd say Killer Clowns.
Nope.
Mystery Men.
Mystery Man Amanda on the board with one. All right. Moving along. Question three. Which Michael Bay movie has the most explosions in it?
Transformers.
Which one?
Age of... The Dark of the Moon.
Dark of the Moon. Justin on the board. All tied at one. Close game. Question four. Which Michael Bay movie has the fewest explosions in it?
The Island?
It is The Island. Good job. Right before multiple choice opened up. Good job, Justin. Question 5. In 2008, Michael Bay was challenged to a charity boxing match by which other filmmaker that movie fans love to hate?
Uli something or other.
Oh, Yule Bowl?
I'm going to give that to Amanda. Yeah, you are correct. Good job, Amanda.
The King movies, right?
Name
of the King?
Yeah.
That guy?
He also does terrible stuff. Question number 6. Reportedly, Michael Bay turned down the offer to direct Van Helsing, but why did he turn it down? Was it A, he wanted to direct The Island instead? 2, he wanted to hang out with his buddy Ben Affleck? 3, he wanted a ham sandwich? D, he wanted to turn Van Helsing into an alien? And 5, he wanted to retire from filmmaking?
I'd say 5, retire from filmmaking.
Nope.
Wanted to make The Island.
Oh, Amanda takes a lead. Three for Amanda, two for Justin, one for Randy. Question 6.
I was going to say ham sandwich. He's that kind of a guy.
He is.
Question 7. Michael Bay directed the Transformers movies, but what other popular 80s franchise is he attached to as a producer?
Ninja Turtles.
Ah, I heard Justin first.
Justin got that, yeah.
Justin 3, Amanda 3, Randy 1. Still got a chance, Randy. 2 of Michael Bay's films have been made into Criterion collections. One is The Rock, the other is
Bad Boys.
Nope. All right, Randy gets multiple choice here. Ragnarok, Armageddon, Apocalypse, Doomsday, or The Rapture?
Armageddon.
All right, Randy with 2. All right, question number 9. Michael Bay was famously froze up and walked off stage at what Vegas trade show?
Yes.
Justin's got 4. All right, number 10, final question. How many Razzies has Michael Bay been nominated for?
Three
is not right. So let me give you a multiple choice. Everyone's still in the game here.
I say 30.
That is a lot, but no. All right, so here we go. Is it A, 5, B, 7, C, 13, or D, 2?
13.
Nope.
5.
5 it is, and Amanda ties it up. 4-4. Wow. 4. Now I wish I had a tiebreaker. Okay, here's the tiebreaker. Of those 5 nominations, how many were for best for worst director?
All of them.
Nope, not all 5.
3.
So. No, it's 4. Okay, tiebreaker question. What is David's favorite Michael Bay movie?
Transformers.
You got a guess, Amanda?
Oh, I'm so wrong. God damn it!
I don't even know all of his movies.
His name
Armageddon.
Armageddon is my favorite.
Are you serious?
Yay!
Good job.
Good job, Amanda. Amanda wins the championship belt today. No one on this podcast knows Michael Bay like Amanda.
Man.
She prides herself on her Michael Bay knowledge.
Hope he dies in a fire.
Maybe we ought to have you interview him on the show.
Yeah, you got to wish him burning a fire tomorrow. Today's his birthday. got to be nice to everyone on their birthday.
Good job. I'm impressed. I thought it would have been Bad Boys 2. I regretted Transformers when I remembered Bad Boys 2. I forgot about Armageddon, and I don't know why. I know that everyone cries up when Bruce Willis says goodbye to Ben.
And she touches the screen.
Yeah.
Just thinking about it. Crying right now. Oh, I'm weeping. It's a beautiful moment in film.
It's not
but
bad.
That's the game. Hope you enjoyed it.
Sweet.
It was in no way created at the last minute because I forgot to make a real game.
You did great.
Yeah, that was a good game. Even though I lost horribly. Does anyone else have anything they would like to share before we zip this up?
Nice RoboCop.
Whoa. Yeah, I wanted to just talk real quick about our other podcasts because they actually are pretty good. I'm impressed.
You sound surprised.
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I'm not in them, so that's a feather in their cap. So that helps. But yeah, the Pixelated Podcast with Steve and Justin, I think, is an amazing video game podcast, and it is both informative and you guys have a good back and forth. You have grown into each other's comfort zones, and it is a fantastic podcast, and everyone should subscribe and rate the Pixelated Podcast. And then, of course, Tyler and Jeff's podcast, the Comic Corner Podcast, even though it missed a week because Jeff lives in the frozen tundra of Baltimore. It's just really good, and we just hope that you guys could do us a favor and rate us on iTunes, because that's how people find podcasts. They find podcasts in their genre that are rated highly. So if you like any of our podcasts, please give us 5 stars and maybe write a little blurb if you could, because it'll help us, and that helps you, because our podcast gets better. If we get a certain amount of rating, maybe I'll leave, and that'll be entice you guys. That's all I got.
Well, cool. I certainly could not have said that better myself. So, yeah, check out all those other podcasts and rate us. You guys will definitely want to tune in next week. We're going to have a very special sci-fi episode and an even more special guest to go with that sci-fi episode. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're all really looking forward to it. And it's going to make your ear holes and your whole face happy.